You're listening to Talking Baseball with Ed Randall, presented by MLB.com. He's Ed Randall. He's talking baseball. What more do you need?
Hi, everybody. I'm Ed Randall, Big Ed and Nora's baby boy, and welcome back to Ed Randall's Talking Baseball. First base coaches are not just hood ornaments. They don't just tell base runners how many outs there are, yell back on a pickoff throw, or bend down to pick up discarded equipment. It's much more complex than that. Generally regarded as the best in the business is the first base coach of the World Series champion Kansas City Royals, Rusty Koontz. Before we talk about your job, 11th round draft choice, 1977 with the Chicago White Sox. How many millions did they give you to sign?
Yeah. How many reasons, how many million reasons why did they keep asking me, why did we sign you again?
How much did you get?
I got $1,000.
And what did you do with it?
And I don't know, probably spent it on something stupid, but and I got a plane ticket to Sarasota, Florida to play rookie ball.
That world championship of the Royals last fall was not your first. You were on the 1984 Detroit Tigers, and in fact, you drove in the game-winning run in the deciding game. No team has ever had a start in recent baseball history like the Tigers did that year, going 35-5 out of the box.
Yeah, it was a special ball club. I mean, we went to spring training, we were 15-15, so it wasn't it wasn't any indication of what was going to happen, but it just seemed like that from the very first game to obviously the last game, it was something special because everything we needed, we got. If we needed a three-run home run, we got it. If we needed a clutch base hit, we got it. And it just kept snowballing. And like you say, I mean, I've never been a part of anything like it, and nor has anybody else for 30 years or whatever, however long it's been since 1984. But it was a special ball club, and we were a tight group, and we pushed and pulled each other to a championship, and it's something that I'll never forget for sure.
When did you decide, towards the end of your career, you wanted to stay in the game?
Well, option B, I wasn't educated. I didn't have a skill. I really couldn't do anything, and I was unloading boxes out of a UPS trailer into a UPS truck, and it didn't take very long before Fred Chicken Stanley called me with the Houston Astros, and he asked me, hey, we got this new job. It's called a rover, and what we do is that we'll have you go around all the minor leagues and teach outfield and base running. And from that day, that was in 1987, and from that day forward, I was in pro baseball as a coach.
And you have developed a reputation now 19 years as a first base coach as the best in the business.
Well, that's to someone's opinion anyway. I'm sure it's not my wife's. But anyway, it's a unique situation that I've been in. I've had managers that really have given me a lot of leeway as far as what we do as far as base running and base stealing and all that kind of stuff. And it's special because I know the responsibility that comes with it, because if something doesn't go right, I know that, you know, I'm the one that has to answer to it, that kind of a deal. So you put a lot of time in what you try to get accomplished on the field. And if it works, it's great. If it doesn't, well, then you got to go back to the old proverbial, drawing board kind of deal.
But the opinion, I think, of many baseball fans is first base coaches are irrelevant. But the job has evolved.
Yeah, well, and that's if you, that's if they use it the, you know, if a manager uses the first base coach in the right way, it's very advantageous to him. Over here, I get to do the base stealing and the base running, that kind of a deal. And you really have to engage in the game. You know, you try to pick up certain things that pitchers do that allow you to steal bases. You have to understand what situations are. We're coming in here and we're playing a National League game. I think this is the first time we've been in a National League park, and there's certain situations that you have to be aware of. For instance, if you got an 8-hole hitter up with a runner on second and two outs, and you look over and you got a pitcher on deck, you got to be careful what you do with the base runners, because you open up a situation where they could walk that 8-hole hitter, and now you got the pitcher up. Or if you do something and the 8-hole hitter happens to make the last out, you're leading off the inning with a pitcher. So there's certain little things that are different when you're in a National League park when you you're using pitchers to hit. And then when we're in an American League ballpark where, you know, we have the DH and we have the luxury of, you know, making those, if you get thrown out, you get thrown out because there's a position player hitting the next time up anyway.
Are there teams still in 2016, to follow up on what you just said, that don't use the first base coach to their advantage?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of first base coaches that aren't, you know, they're not involved in the running game. And if you have the right guy in the right situation and the right base runners, that kind of a deal, and you can incorporate that first base coach into helping with base stealing and understanding, you know, what pitchers like to do and trying to find keys and little tells and all that kind of stuff. Well, if they put that kind of time in, which takes a couple hours a day, you know, we got Clone tonight, so you're trying to find something that he does. Well, if you don't have the freedom to use it, it's just a couple hours of homework that never get used. And a lot of first base coaches don't want that responsibility or don't understand, you know, what base stealing and the base running game is all about. And they rely on a manager to have to do all that thinking and that. Well, it's just another tool for a manager if he can find that right guy.
Doesn't that boggle your mind? Boggle your mind?
To take care of that. Yeah. Well, there's guys that there's just certain guys out there that don't want to do that part of it. You know, they would rather, you know, just take their defensive area, or, you know, like I have to do the outfield and the base running and the base stealing and the bunting. Well, when you incorporate four things, and there's only eight to begin with, when you have the responsibility of four things that you have to do, it's a lot of time and a lot of energy during the day. Well, a lot of times they'll split that stuff up, you know, with amongst other coaches and that. Well, If you're gonna be a base stealing, base running, a good base running club, and your first base coach isn't involved in it, because he's the first guy, he's the first line of offense when you incorporate that kind of stuff. Well, I got to get him to second before Jersh can get him home, one of those kind of deals, or I got to push him on a throw home. I got to push him to second on a throw, and read that and help out a base runner by telling him to go, 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 or stay here, one of those kind of deals, where a lot of times you don't see that happen on some of the other teams. But I will say this, they're getting more and more and more involved, and they're starting to incorporate the first base coaches a lot more than they have in the past.
Are you? But do you get the sense you are the most involved first base coach in the game?
I don't know about that, but I could be one of them. I could be one of them, because I know it takes a lot of video work. You know, we get here at noon, and we don't go out and stretch until 5. And every minute of that time, you're either taking somebody out and working with them on the field, or you're in front of a video monitor trying to find certain things that teams do, and you're just kind of going back and forth between those two. So your 5 hours it just flies by. And now we got to go out and go through batting practice, and it's a grind. It's every day, and there's a lot of time, but I don't see how you can do it any other way than what I do, because it's fun.
Rusty Koontz is with us from the Kansas City Royals on Ed Randall's Talking Baseball. You have been a first base coach at Seattle, at the then Florida Marlins, at Pittsburgh, here at Kansas City. What was the job like in 1989 when you started with Seattle?
Wow. It was very easy, because I didn't know anything and I didn't know how to do anything, one of those kind of deals. And, being a Rover in 87-88 with the Houston Astros, I got to do a little bit of something there. And I learned a lot through trial and error and a lot of mistakes. And by the time I got a big league job with the Seattle Mariners, I had a little idea, but that was about as far as I can go, just a little. And Lord knows it's ballooned into what it is right now. And all the little things that I see now, I would have never been able to see back in those days. You know, it's just amount of, you know, 19, 20 years of experience, you know, being able to see little things and try things that blow up on you and you're asking for the manager to forgive you for it, you know, that kind of thing. I promise it will never happen again, and, you know, 3 weeks later it happens again.
Is it your fault if a guy gets picked off first?
Yes.
It is.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Because if, like for instance, if you're going to take an aggressive lead against Bartolo Colon, you're going to get picked off, because he's that quick to first base. And when you know how quick guys are and what kind of a lead you need to take and all that kind of stuff, well, then you got to relay that to your players, you know. And yeah, they're going to make little mistakes here and there, but it's not going to come without information. And that's how I take it. When a guy gets picked off because he was in a position where he wasn't going to be able to get back, that's on me. That's on me, because I can always move him back a step and make it a little easier for him.
Always use a stopwatch?
Always. Yeah. I mean, I trust
from
my
eyes. From your earliest days, you used a stopwatch?
Yeah. And I trust my eyes, you know, and I got a kind of an idea of, you know, if a guy's 1-1 or 1-3 or 1-5, but I always have to use that stopwatch as a backup, one of those kind of deals. So
the proliferation of video, though, where we are swimming in video, has changed your job.
Oh yeah, without a doubt. It's made it a million times easier, because what I see at game speed, I'll go back and look at it on a video, and I'm like, oh my gosh, I missed this, this, and this. I missed four, I got one of four things right.
What could you have missed, for example?
Well, like if I'm looking for a certain thing that a pitcher does, well, there's three things that he did prior to that. Mm-hmm. And I'm going off of the thing that I saw at game speed on the field, and I'll go back and look at it on video, and I'm going, oh my gosh, that was the fourth thing he did. I missed the first, second, and the third thing as far as, you know, him, you know, his move to the home, his pickoff play to first, one of those, you know, the inside move to second. And once you go back and you look at it at video speed, where you can slow it down, go back and forth, and it's all high definition now. Oh my goodness! I mean, it's crystal clear.
You can see the hair inside their noses.
Yes, absolutely. You know, I mean, I see the finger grips. I see, you know, the seams on the balls. I see all those kind of things. And in the past, it was so grainy, you might not see a baseball.
Give me a typical day for you with a 7:05 game.
Well, okay, we're here in New York playing the Mets, and I woke up at 9. I slept until 9 because I was a little tired. But I got a iPad, and it has all their bullpen and all their starters. You know, we're going to face Colon and Syndergaard, so I don't have to worry about the other guys unless we go late. But I got all the bullpen guys on the video. So I run them back, and I have sheets, and I got charts and all this kind of stuff of, you know, where they hold the ball, how they throw the plate, the times, the keys I'm looking for, all this, you know, the certain situations that they like to do things. And then that takes about 2 hours, and then it's or probably about 3 hours today. But then it's about 12:30, and you take a shower, and you get dressed, and you get on the bus, and you come out here at 1 o'clock, and then you go to the video, and you continue to do what you're doing. And I'm also having to do Houston and St. Louis Cardinals, because that's the next homestand. So not only am I concentrating on the New York Mets, which is today and tomorrow, but on the following day we have a three-game series, and I'm working on their three starters and all their bullpen. And then I'm also extending it out because we play St. Louis Cardinals four games. So, yeah, so sometimes teams run into one another, and I'll walk up and I'll say, well, you know what? And we're talking about the Mets, and I'll say, you know that Wainwright guy or whatever it is, or Waka or Martinez? And they'll look at me like, what? That's St. Louis Cardinals. I'm going, oh my gosh, it is. So they start running into one another after a while. So, but yeah, that's a typical day. And then I took Eibner out. We just called Eibner up. We went out at 2:30 because that's what time we had to field. And I hit him some fly balls so he could look at the background of the big league stadium. And we hit balls in a corner and balls off the wall to see how it rolls. And then I hit him some ground balls. And then during batting practice, he'll do some power shagging and stuff. And then I'll get the other guys their work in, but that's pretty much it. And then then after BP, you get dressed and you have a three and a half hour game, and then you get dressed and go home, and I'll study for about hour and a half of Syndergaard for tomorrow, and then I'll wake up because we have a day game. I won't get to be able to do that in the morning, so I got to do it tonight. So I go to bed at about 2, and I wake up about 9 every day.
But the proliferation of video and all the ocean of information you have, I get the sense, makes your job easier than making it more complex.
Yeah, no, without a doubt. Without that kind of help, it would take you it would take you probably games, series, and years of seeing the same guy over and over and over again to pick up the other little things that you need, when all you got to do is go back and turn that video thing on and it'll tell you pretty much everything you need to know.
But what you were looking at, you're looking at body parts.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, you're trying to find body parts, you're trying to find patterns, you're trying to find pitch count, what they like to throw in certain counts.
Tell the story. There's a great story about you and David Price.
Oh, yeah. Well, we found out that, you know, with Pricey, you know, he did a certain thing. And then right after that, you know, he went to the plate. So we kept looking for it. And then, boom, there it was. And then once we got that, we got Alex Rios at first base, and he saw it. And then he went on it, and he ended up stealing a base. And that was the only stolen base last year that David Price gave up. And so,
you saw Price breathe deeply when he was going to throw the change.
That was one of the things. Yeah, that was one of the things that he did. But there was a couple. See, that's the part I was telling you about. That's the first thing I'm looking for. Well, he did two things before that that told us what he was going to do before he even went to that. So it was like, okay, he had that, but he also had a couple other things that he did that we went on.
And during the World Series against the New York Mets, you picked up stuff on John Neese twice.
Well, yeah, and his was more of a pitch selection and pitch count, that kind of a deal, where we were looking for a pattern that he would fall into or whatever it is, and sure enough, he fell into it, and we had the right situation with the right runner, and we took advantage of it, and he ended up throwing the pitch that we were looking for, and we...
And you're a genius.
We were lucky that we got a bag off of it. That's, yeah, because when you steal bases like those kind of things, they're more luck than good, you know. So, but, because, well, I'll tell you what, when you tell a guy to go, your heart gets racing pretty quick, and you just hope that it works out, one of those kind of deals.
But
so you have to answer back to the manager and say, what'd you go there for? I don't know.
But you led the American League, the Royals did, in stolen bases in 2013 and 14. You were second last year. So you're guessing pretty good.
Well, we got some pretty good athletes on the field that, you know, they're not afraid. They'll take the information and they'll literally run with it. One of those kind of deals. So, yeah, I've been really lucky as far as the athleticism that we have here, and especially in the outfield. We need speed at Kauffman, and when you have speed in the outfield, you're also going to have speed on the bases, and you're going to be able to use them because, you know, they bought into it, they locked into it, and they understand what we're trying to do with it. And, you know, so far, so good. It's been working.
But also, the fact is that the Royals have been acclaimed for the manner in which they play baseball. They don't sit back waiting for the home run. The home run is very difficult in your home field. And so, therefore, there's the premium on base running, on reaching base. You don't necessarily work deep counts. And for that, you were acclaimed last year and wound up winning a championship.
Yeah. You know, I mean, that's, again, you got to have the type of players that want to play that style of game. And we, like I said, I mean, we play teams that are built for gap to home runs. Okay, well, when the gaps and home runs close off, that's all they have to go by. And we are a team, like you said earlier on, we play at Kauffman Stadium, which is very difficult, 390 in the gaps to hit home runs. Well, when you do get a home run, it's very few and far between, and it's more of a surprise than anything. But we can have athletic guys that can run and that can move around the bases. And so we just got to a point, well, instead of looking for a long ball, let's see if we can take another 90 feet somehow, some way. So if we get a base hit, we think two. If we're first, we think home. We don't think third. We think home on base hits from first base. So we don't check up into bases. We go by the bag, and then we got a great third base coach in Mike Jersley, who's very aggressive as far as waving guys. And when those players see that for a couple of times, they get on board with it because they want to be that guy too.
Plus, also, you love the delayed steal, and there's a lot of guys in the industry who don't, but you love it, and you make it work.
Well, yeah, and there are certain situations that, you know, you can use it, and certain situations you can't, but then you have to have the right combination of the guy that wants to do it or can do it, because not all players can. you know, they might want to, but their timing is not right. You know, their footwork's not right, and they just can't execute what you need them to do. So you got to go to something else. But we've got probably four or five guys that can do it, and they know how to do it, and they want to do it. So we just have to find the right situations to do it.
We're concentrating on your work at first base, but we would be remiss if we didn't talk about how, because of your outfield instruction, you were the guy who turned Alex Gordon into a Gold Glove left fielder.
Yeah, well, I gave him the information, is what I gave him. I told him what he needed to do, what he needed to learn, and how he needed to do it. Now, Alex just took it to a whole nother level because of his work ethic and his habits and all that kind of stuff. And it came very quick, within a couple of weeks, which is like off the chart. But we went back down to AAA, and within a couple of weeks, he got it. And four Gold Gloves and a Platinum later, I mean, he is just that guy. But it's only because he could take the information, he could process the information, and then he could work and do, and he's relentless with his what we call power shagging during batting practice, because he takes every ball. Fly balls are tag situations, ground balls are second, runner on second going home, and he works on that every single day. So he just takes it to a whole nother. So for him to win Gold Gloves and Platinums and all that kind of stuff is not by accident. It's because he works very, very hard at it.
You've tried to retire each of the last 2 years, and the general manager of this team brings you back. And after listening to this show, people understand what's going through Moore's head, that he can't allow you to retire.
Yeah, well, yeah, there's the mental side of it, and then there's the physical side of it. And I'm just getting to that point where...
He's not retiring.
Thanks, Ned. Where
the Kansas City Royals manager Ned Yost making his point,
where you just run out of gas. I mean, I'm not 30, I'm not 40, I'm not even 50. I'm 60 now, well actually 61. But yeah, I mean it's a lot of time, a lot of days, a lot of travel, a lot of in and out of hotels, which when 10 years ago wasn't even.
Never thought about it. Wasn't a thought.
You never even thought about that kind of stuff. But, boy, just trying to crawl out of bed at 9 o'clock in the morning now and doing it day after day after day, yeah, it lets me know that I'm 60 now every single day. And, I mean, it's flattering that everybody wants you to be here. Everybody wants you to be around. Everybody wants you to do the job. But physically, I'm just to a point where I can't do the job like this at the level that I need to do it and want to do it. I just physically can't do it anymore. So
but they think you're indispensable.
Oh, yeah. They think, well, yeah, well, no. If you leave, yeah, everything's going. What? I replaced a guy that was indispensable, okay? And I've been here for 10 years. So somebody will come along and do my job and do it great. No doubt about that.
So that'll do it for Rusty Kuntz and myself on MLB.com. If you are on the move, thanks for the ride, and thanks for listening to Ed Randall's Talking Baseball.